Happy 2022. There aren't very many things about 2022 that I feel confident about in the predictive sense. But one of them is that I am pretty much guaranteed to write the wrong date on some things. So I can count on that. Nice to have something to count on, you know? This is important. So there's my certitude right there, all tidily bundled up. I will write 2021. I will say 2021 a few times before I turn the corner and get the numbers right. The time of year, you know, the turning of the year where we do as Judy did, and thank you, Judy, for the music and for the thoughtful opening of community time, as always. This is the time of year where we do tend to reflect a little bit, typically, stereotypically. And as I was thinking back on 2021, feels like there's lots of memes and posts and, you know, attitude in a broad sense, not necessarily negative sense, out there that says 2021, what I want to do mostly with 2021 is just throw it in the trash bin and pretend it didn't happen and move on. And I can appreciate that. Yeah, I can appreciate that there were things about 2021 that are not, you know, that we don't recall fondly, of course. Having said that, there are, at least in the context of this community, some things that I feel really grateful for. And I don't think it's a good idea to just barrel into the next year dismissively around these things. And at the top of that list is my gratitude for the commitment to staying connected that I've seen this community demonstrate in lots of different ways. I mean, I know we are, many of us, tapped out on things that are on screens, and here we are again back in Screenland, you know, for the foreseeable future in terms of gatherings. We'll keep you posted, obviously, but you know that there we are. We're back in this screen kind of virtual space for the good of our health and the health of others. I'm really grateful to people for just sticking with it. It doesn't sound very glamorous, just sticking with it, you know, but sometimes it's hard to do. So thank you for a good year, everybody. In context, I know, but thank you for a good year. Thank you for a good year in terms of supporting the table in the way that I've just talked about, by participating, which I think is the key for a community like ours. And of course, practically speaking, there are still some bills to pay, and thank you for participating in that way as well. Sometimes it's hard to feel like, it's hard to feel connected to something virtual. And when we don't feel connected, we're not as motivated to participate in other ways. And yet people have continued to participate in the ways that we could, by gathering virtually, by making music, you know, by continuing to do the sometimes quite strenuous work of saying what's going on in the community when we're distant, like Judy this morning talking about how long it's been since we've had a chance to see Ray face to face, for example. And we could have a long list of names there. You know, anyway, thank you for choosing community over isolation in whatever ways we can. I'm really, really, really grateful for that. I want to acknowledge as we get underway that we are, in this part of the world, signatories to Treaty 1. We are all participants together in the enactment of those treaties as inhabitants of this continent and this part of this continent. And I look forward with hope to the continued movement toward the exposure of the truth of that story. And I say that conscious of the fact that I expect the unfolding of that to continue to reflect poorly on traditions that have been important in my life, but also believing that without truth there is not reconciliation, and there is no system of belief that gives us the right to hide the truth or to abuse power and position and justify it in the name of anything, including our notions about the divine. So I do look forward to the continued unfolding of that and to what it calls us to as individuals and as a collective. I want us to take a few moments as we get underway today to breathe together. I think this is one of the gifts that our time together affords us as a community, and I'm grateful for this as well. As always, this is an invitation and not an obligation. I was reminded again in some correspondence with people in the community about something else this week, how valuable that part of our ethos is to many, many of us, that this would be something we engage in because we choose to do so, whether this is breathing or whether this is showing up, whether this is exploring what we believe, coming in and out of community, whatever shape that takes, to be made welcome, knowing that once you're in, you don't have to feel shame or dis-ease if you step out. Once you pick up a bag, it's okay to put it down. I so want the table to continue to be and to grow in its capacity to be that kind of place. So, long way of saying, participate or don't, as you choose and as you know is right for you. If you are joining us for this morning, what I want us to do together is, in an embodied way, take a few moments to begin our year together in this context, in a place of peace and calm. Not easy things to find sometimes, and usually things that take some deliberate effort. They don't just fall out of the sky and land on us. One of the ways we can do that is with our bodies. And so here's what we're going to do together this morning. I want you to get somewhere where you're comfortable if you're able, if your environment allows it this morning. If not, perhaps another time. But somewhere where you can sit with your feet flat on the floor, your hands at rest. I like to rest mine just on my legs or in my lap. And where you can take the time to notice your breathing. And then as you notice your breathing, and you can use whatever practice is comfortable for you in terms of breathing in and carrying your breath and breathing out. As you notice your breathing, what I invite you to do this morning is to consciously slow it down. So find the rhythm of your breathing. So take a few moments. And then once you find it, I want you to just reduce the pace of it a little bit. And by the way, if you're not a morning person, and we do this, and I realize it's, you know, like after 11, 20 after 11 or whatever time it is, it's not early morning perhaps, but even holiday rhythms, sometimes this might be just getting the day started, or just your Sunday rhythm. If you start to do this exercise, and as you slow your breathing down, you feel like you're falling asleep or you're becoming sleepy, just become sleepy. It's okay. This is not about behaving something. It's about being present to something. Okay? So, breathe in, become conscious of the rhythm of your breathing, and then slow it down. And once we're kind of in that space a little bit, I'll give us a bit of a next. All right? Let's breathe together. If while you're breathing you feel like other thoughts come to mind, as they sometimes do when we slow down, don't be distressed about that. Just acknowledge them and return to your breathing. And as your breathing slows, it invites you to just relax and enjoy the feeling of breathing slowly and peacefully. If you feel like any tensions built up in your shoulders as you've been counting or paying attention to breathing, just invite you to let your shoulders relax, let the tension go out of them, let gravity pull your arms, your elbows, your shoulders down toward the ground the way that it always does, but this time don't resist. Just let them come down. All right, if you've closed your eyes as part of that, I would invite you to gently open them. Come back to the come back to the land of doing what we're doing. Thank you. If you were listening to that on the podcast, or if you are listening to that on the podcast, I would invite you to, as always, just hit the pause button and take as much time as you'd like for all of that. One of the many things that I miss about our being together in person is the dynamic of community time. And this might seem a little bit like a crazy thought, but I realized as I was reflecting on this that there are some people in this community that might not even really have much of a storehouse of memories about community time in person. And some of you won't have any memories of community time in person because this has always and only ever been an online community for you. That feels like a paradigm shift to me after a decade of being in this community in person, exclusively, not live streaming, with one or two exceptions over the years. It was show up or, you know, I mean, there's been the podcast, but in terms of anything on a screen, not a thing. But now there are a number of people for whom this community and regular connection with it only happens like this. And to me, that felt like, when I reflected on it a bit, that felt like one of those markers of, wow, this pandemic thing really has dragged on for some time now. At the same time, I feel deeply grateful for the ways in which we've been able to stay connected and we've been able to share at least some bits and pieces of our lives with one another. I know I've mentioned this before, but I would say that there are even some ways we've gotten deeper glimpses of one another's realities over the past couple of years. And in particular, that's been true for the people who've turned the camera on themselves and their homes and their lives for the benefit of the community. Most notably, the musicians in our community in this format and the people who lead community time. There are aspects of that that simply would not have ever happened if it wasn't for the pandemic forcing us to go online. And as strange as it might sound, I feel like that's kind of been a good gift from a not so good circumstance. And that feels like an important thing to acknowledge. That happens in general. That happens sometimes, doesn't it? That not good circumstances can also carry good gifts. We have an experience or we encounter some reality in the world that we know, we can tell that this is truly not good, but there's still something beautiful or thought-provoking or change-inducing inside of it that we carry out of it into the rest of our lives. Now, this could be, you know, Pollyanna-ish denial, right? I ran across the phrase the other day that I hadn't seen before, toxic positivity. Yes, that is a thing, I think, or at least a name that points towards something, a phrase that points towards something. This is not Pollyanna-ish denial. This is not, it's all goodness. It's not all goodness. That's not even helpful. But it is choosing to see the same circumstances from more than one point of view. It is choosing a kind of complexity in our worldview that can embrace ranges of experiences. And sometimes those kind of good gifts under difficult circumstances come our way because other people choose to look at the world with those other lenses from their experience as well. And when they find good things as a result, they share them with us. I've had a couple of those experiences recently, and I want to pass them along to you because I think these are worth sharing. So the first for me in terms of this reflection was when Shireen, who's a member of our community, sent me a link to something called the hashtag The Busk. This is a fundraising event. Shireen was not trying to raise funds when she sent this. I think she just had found a good thing and she was sharing it. But it is a fundraising event from a group called the Dublin Simon Community in Dublin, Ireland. And they put this on every year to raise funds for their work dealing especially and particularly with issues of insecure housing and sort of related problems in their city. Their tagline in their work is, "No one should be homeless if Dublin is their home." A lovely and motivating goal. Now, if you check this out at all, you'll discover that there are lots of Simon communities. They're doing this sort of work. But this particular busking thing, this particular Christmas Eve busking thing, seems to be a bit unique to the Dublin folks. And historically, what they've done is they just actually go out on a particular street on Christmas Eve and they busk, and people have started to know this is a thing and they've started to show up for it. And then, of course, they have the added twist of having some folks around to film the whole thing so they can share it more broadly. But in Dublin, as here, the pandemic has messed with this, and so what they did this year was get a bunch of folks together in this grand old church in their area of the city called St. Patrick's, and they filmed what amounts to a very interesting sort of busking style concert without an audience event, and then they broadcast that on a bunch of different media platforms. Now, the lineup for this thing is pretty varied. There were some folks I knew. There was a bunch I didn't because they aren't really on the radar here in North America, or at least they're not on my music radar here. Maybe because I'm not Irish. But in any case, I knew when I started to watch this, though, I knew that this wasn't just one of those, like, let's get a bunch of the musical kids in the community together and see if we can raise a few bucks by busking. You'll open the guitar case and see what people toss in. Maybe this is also that when they do it on the street, but it's so not that as well. And I could tell that that wasn't the case because the person who opened the whole thing was Bono. Yeah, not one of the, I mean, sort of one of the local kids. He's from Dublin, so that kind of makes sense. But if I was trying to think of, what A-lister could I get to come out and busk with me to see if we can raise a few bucks, I wouldn't necessarily have Bono in my contact list, but apparently these people do. So he opened the whole thing, and he opened it with this really, oh man, I don't even know how to describe the song. It was kind of a wild Alleluia song. And it left me at least feeling like I was suspended in between, an intractable problem and an unstoppable sense of hope. Like just immovable force meets, or unstoppable force meets immovable object kind of moment for me. Anyway, there's also a tune in the show by Damien Rice, who, whether we listen to him like fans or not, the Damien Rice is the person who wrote Trusty and True, which is a song that feels at this point like it pretty much belongs to us as a community, like it must have come out of, Judy or Tim or Cheryl or somebody, but it's Damien Rice from the UK. And there's also a bunch of input, musical and otherwise, from Glenn Hansard, an artist from that part of the world who's had some traction here in North America, well worth checking out in his own right. And then there were some very powerful pieces of poetry by a variety of folks, most of whom I'd never heard of, but folk artists and poets from Ireland, from Dublin in particular, all quite artfully filmed. The filmmakers who put this thing together kicked things off in their edit of it with a short interview with Bono. And part of what he said has been rattling around in my head ever since. Now, this won't be word for word. I haven't been able to go back and check it against the broadcast. But as I remember it, he talked about how, and this was a phrase he used, how if there is a love and logic behind the universe, then it's on us to see the divine in one another regardless of our circumstance. He talked about how if there's a love and a logic behind the universe, then that should stir something in us in terms of what we see in one another. And again, the context for this is an event that's meant to raise both awareness and resources for those without shelter. So it feels like that context is important in terms of how we look at the people that we encounter in the world who might not be living the way we're living, right? And Bono, in that conversation, referenced traditional Christian narratives in that interview. He talked about how important it is to him that the Christian story, in particular, starts out with a baby born, in his words, in the straw and the shit. In other words, in poverty, in dire circumstances. And for him, that was an important aspect of that narrative because that's one religion's story about how if the divine could be in a baby born under those circumstances, then the divine is present in all of us. If they're anywhere, if they're everywhere, that idea. And that, for Bono, is what helps us to see one another as valuable, as worthy of love and respect and the dignity of things like a place to sleep at night where you're not freezing under some layers of cardboard, to have enough food to eat day by day that you don't have to wonder if you're going to be able to survive. Dignity, worth, lovability, ability to love, all those things bundled together. To put that another way, because love lives in us, we are all both worthy of love and able to see that spark in everyone and to respond and interact in accordance with that. When that gets muddled, when our ability to see that spark of the divine, that of God which is in everyone, to use Quaker language for it, when that gets disordered, when we can't see that way anymore, often it also means that we are unable to have others see us that way. And that whole cycle of love and be loved, love your neighbor as yourself, love yourself so you can love your neighbor, same thing in reverse, starts to fall apart. And we lose our grip on this. It's easy to forget that, it seems to me. Or maybe to say it another way, it's hard to remember that. There are so many voices telling us that we don't fit in, that we don't measure up, that we're not worthy, that we don't look like we should, that we don't live like we ought to, that we don't have enough of X to feel good about ourselves, and on with those messages. And it's no wonder, in a circumstance like that, in a culture like that, it's really no wonder that we're vulnerable to bumper sticker ideas like, you know, new year, new you. Is that right on the margin of toxic positivity? It could be, I guess. Depends how we come at it. We are sometimes so immersed in the expectations that surround us and trying to meet those expectations that it's hard to remember that if there is a love and a logic behind the universe, we're included. That it is around us, between us, and within us. Universe. We're the same raw stuff. The same divine stuff. You know, at least from where I sit, it would be nice to think that if we just started doing the right things, like if we just got our priorities sorted out so we only or even mostly did what was good, then all the other pieces of this human experience would just sort of fall into place. It would be nice to think that if we could get that sorted out, just do good enough, that the other problems would sort of recede, they would fade into the distance, that things like housing insecurity or food insecurity or white supremacy or ethnically motivated discrimination and hatred or climate change or runaway capitalism or oligarchies or violence of both the in overt and covert sense or just despair in general would sort of take one look at our right choices and our honorable behaviors and they would just give up and go home. Go home. Give up and go away. Be gone. But it doesn't seem to be quite that simple. At least not in my experience, it doesn't seem to be quite that simple. I've been wanting to read us this next piece since the first moment I read it. This is from a book called I Hope We Choose Love, which was a gift from our oldest to me this Christmas. Dasha is a trans person, and this is a trans girl's, the subtitle is A Trans Girl's Notes from the End of the World. And I was just a couple lines into it and was knocked out by a bunch of things about it. Anyway, I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to read the opening essay is what it's called, but it's shorter. Don't panic. It's a short piece. But I just want to read us the opening piece from this, not because I think it will resonate with everyone. I'm actually quite confident that won't be the case. I want to read it because it's honest and insightful and challenging and because it doesn't flinch from hard things, but it also doesn't fold up in the face of them. I don't think this is some kind of closely scripted answer to all the great questions. I think that'll become clear as I read it, but I want to read it to you, and then I want to plug it into sort of a kinder, gentler approach to the new year for us to consider. Author is Kai Cheng Thom, KaiChengThom, for the book lovers in our community that might want to chase that one down. So this is Kai's introduction, with Love from the End of the World. I felt a lot of resonance right from go with this as well, because the young adults in my world, many of them have a sense of an apocalypse being their reality. And that this is not just about COVID. COVID feels like an instance of things that gesture toward the end of the world as we've known it for many, many young adults, I think, in this time. As I write this book in the spring of 2019, it has become something of a truism among my community of queer people of color that the end of the world is nigh. A wave of right-wing and openly fascist governments have been elected to power across the world. Wealth and power are increasingly concentrated in the hands of a brazenly corrupt few. Climate change and mass extinction are ravaging the earth, largely unacknowledged by those with the political power to do anything about it. As for those communities of queer people, racialized people, disabled people, marginalized people that have been taking back their power, the social justice activists that raised me to believe in the possibility of a revolution that would change and save the world, sometimes it seems like the most painful cuts of all come from within my own community. Call-out culture, lateral violence, puritanical politics, intimate partner abuse, public shaming. We know so much about trauma, but so little about how to heal it. What would, quotes, community, close quotes, know about saving us from the apocalypse. In 2016, I turned 25 years old and published my first novel, which was quickly followed by a poetry collection and then a children's book, all to relative success. I became, quote, queer famous, close quote, that year. This was also the year that broke my heart, which has kept right on breaking ever since. This was the year that Trump was elected, that millions of people were displaced in the Syrian refugee crisis, and that 49 people, most of them queer and brown, were shot to death in a nightclub in Orlando, Florida. In the intervening years, more disasters and atrocities have followed. My 25th year of life was also the year that I experienced several devastating personal crises that resulted in the loss of some dear friends and chosen family members, as well as psychological trauma from which I have not recovered. For all its edgy pretensions, social justice culture, and this is a person who I'd identify as a social justice warrior. They are a social justice activist, so they're writing from inside this, just an important perspective on their critique. For all its edgy pretensions, social justice culture has not prepared me for the havoc that abuse, mental illness, and the immense pressure of living as a publicly known trans woman of color in the social media era could wreak upon my soul. Not only was I in pain, but my pain was publicly known, scrutinized, gossiped over. People, mostly queer and racialized people, whom I didn't know, sent me emails and Facebook messages that were thousands of words long, asking for intimacy and attention, and occasionally threatening me when I didn't acquiesce. Journalists asked me for interviews about my private life, my sex life, my family, my mental health. No topic seemed to be off limits. I was stalked in real life and online. I became terrified and paranoid. I stopped trusting people and this thing we call community. I stopped trusting myself. All around me, the people I loved were also in crisis. Psychological, financial, medical, interpersonal. When you live in a community of queers, anarchists, and activists, crisis is the baseline and stability an outlier. Among trans women, a life expectancy of 35 is the norm. I lost my faith in community. I lost hope in social justice, in revolution, in the world. And I would say, if you're still listening, focus in. This is important. When we lose faith in the things that matter, it's easy to turn to anger. Anger helps us survive when survival seems impossible. I have been very angry throughout my life, and I still am in some ways. I need to be, to live. Yet anger, with its siblings, rage and vengeance, have also been poisonous influences in my communities. I've seen people do awful things to one another in the name of anger and revenge, and it never seems to help anyone in the end. So, in the midst of despair, I have come to believe that love, the feeling of love, the politics of love, the ethics and ideology and embodiment of love is the only good option in this time of the apocalypse. What else do we have? I mean love that is kind, but also honest. Love that is courageous and relentless and willing to break the rules and smash the system. Love that cares about people more than ideas, that prizes each and every one of us as essential and indispensable. I mean love that is compassionate and accountable. I mean love that confirms and reaffirms us as complex and fallible, yet lovable anyway. Love that affirms us as human. I want to live in love and believe in love. If I have to die, I want to die in love. This whole world might be coming to its end, or it might be in the midst of an enormous and terrifying change that leads to something better. Either way, I want to go through it in love with the people I love. So this is a book about love, which is a sentence I never thought I would write. This is a book that I never thought I could write. It isn't easy to believe in love. Not after so many people and ideals I've held so dear have hurt me or been taken from me. But then I too have hurt people and taken things from people. I have made mistakes, and I have done worse than mistakes. I still want to be believed in and loved. So, this is a book about love. This is a book about revolutionary love. Love that might not save us at the end of the world, but that might make it possible to live through. It may be hard to believe in. It will be harder to live. I hope we choose it anyway. In Love That Never Dies, Kai Cheng Thom, April 2019. So in the midst of despair, I have come to believe that love, the feeling of love, the politics of love, the ethics and ideology and embodiment of love is the only good option in this time of the apocalypse. What else do we have? That's good stuff. That is good stuff. That is consistent, it feels to me, with the best insights from the great spiritual leaders of history who said things like, love your neighbor as yourself. And then showed us that although the words are short and the sentence fits on a bumper sticker, the path to living them out can sometimes be long. And that's why we need an idea, a value, a belief like love to guide us and inform our imaginations and to fuel our choices. That, of course, is going to look different for each one of us. We are not all of us trans girls and people of color to boot. You know, we're not all living in activist, anarchist, revolutionary communities and hearing those voices and in dialogue with them all the time, like Thom is. It's not that there won't be common ground. I believe there will. It's more that the range of expressions of something like the feelings, politics, ethics, ideology, and embodiment of love is huge. Just, and not only that, not only is it huge, but it's expanding, because love is one of those things that doesn't behave according to the normal sort of physical laws of the universe. Love is one of those things that when you give it away, it expands. There's not a limited supply. All that to say, the piece that I want to offer as the last words for this talky bit are not going to be an expression of everyone's vision of how to live out things like that ethic, that ideology, those politics, that embodiment of love. That's going to have some very unique individual shapes, also some very unique collective or communal shapes. So this piece that I want to share is not going to fit everyone any more than the piece I just read fits everyone. But I think it'll touch a tender spot for at least some of us. And if it doesn't do anything else, I hope that it stirs our imaginations about how to come at a year like 2022 under the current circumstances in a way that opens us to kindness and gentleness and hope, and all of these things feel like to me like parts of the puzzle that, when it's all put together, we would call love. This came to me as a gift as well from within our community. It was written by Nadia Bolz Weber, and Misty sent it my way, and gave me permission both to mention that that's where it came from in terms of my experience of it, and to share it with you. So this comes with Nadia Bolz Weber's blessing, and I would say also with Misty's. Piece is called A Blessing for the New Year. As you enter this new year, as you pack away the Christmas decorations and get out your stretchy pants, as you face the onslaught of false promises offered you through new disciplines and elimination diets, as you grasp for control of yourself and your life and this chaotic world, may you remember that there is no resolution that, if kept, will make you more worthy of love. There is no resolution that, if kept, will make life less uncertain and allow you to control a pandemic and your children and the way other people act. So, this year, may you just skip the part where you resolve to be better, do better, and look better this time. May you give yourself the gift of really, really low expectations. May you expect so little of yourself that you can be super proud of the smallest of accomplishments. May you expect so little of the people in your life that you actually notice and cherish every small, lovely thing about them. May you expect so little of the supply chain and the service industry that you notice more of what you do get and less of what you don't, and then just tip really well anyhow. May you expect to get so little out of 2022 that you can celebrate every single thing it offers you, however small, because you deserve joy and not disappointment. So, I wish you a happy as possible new year. Love, Nadia. There you go. Gonna leave us with that.